All right. Hello, listeners. This is Amelia Jury with the Macintosh Radio Review at WDRT Viroqua. We are thrilled to have Miss Lois Lowry, author of notable works such as The Giver and Number the Stars, join us for a special radio interview today. Miss Lowry, thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm actually in a hotel room in New York. I live actually in Maine, but I've been in New York on book business. So I'm speaking to you from the Big Apple.
Oh, how exciting. Miss Lowry, just to go ahead and get started here, could you tell our listeners a little bit about your background, such as how you got into writing your now-renowned books and a history of your authorship?
Okay, that could take a very long time, but I'll try to condense it and make it short. I will say that I was a person who grew up loving books, loving writing, knowing from the time I was a child that I wanted to be a writer. But then, like many of us in the 1950s, and I'm 89 years old, so in the 1950s, I was in my 20s. I dropped out of college, married young, had four children. So it was a kind of diversion for a while. Nonetheless, when my kids were in school and I had gone back and finally gotten my degree, I then set about to do what I had always wanted to do. And my first book was published when I was 40 years old in 1977. I had thought of myself as a writer for adults, but a book publisher had contacted me, having read a short story I'd published in a magazine, and said, "You sound like somebody who might be able to write for young people. Would you consider writing a novel for a young audience?" They didn't promise to publish it, but to have a publisher interested in that way was quite a step forward. Anyway, I did, at their suggestion, write my first book, which was for young people, and it was quite successful. And for the first time, I began to appreciate, even though I had had kids who had grown up loving books, after writing my first book for kids, I appreciated, because of their response, how important literature can be in the lives of young people. I realize, as an adult reader, I love books, I love to read, but none of them are ever going to change my life at this point. But when you're 13 years old or 15 or 10, books can change your life. And I realized that because of what kids wrote to me after that first book was published. That first book was the first that of a list that now I'd have to recount, but I'm pretty certain that comes to 52.
Oh, wow.
So I've been doing that ever since 1977. A book a year, sometimes more than a book in 1 year. And I've never gotten tired of doing it.
Wow, well, good for you, and that's absolutely amazing. Outstanding to myself, and always one of our most requested in our catalog. So I just want to say thank you for all the work and time that you've put into your works. Miss Lowry, thank you. What are your sources of inspiration for your works?
Well, I mentioned that there are 52 books out there, and there are probably 52 different sources of inspiration. But a lot of what I deal with comes from my own memories of being young. I am, I guess I would say, blessed with a very subjective memory, so that when I think of myself as 8 or 10 or 14, I actually can feel myself back inside that young girl, looking out from the eyes that I saw from then, and re-feeling the feelings that I had as a kid. And that allows me to create characters who become real to the reader, I think. And so it's my own childhood, my own youth that is the largest inspiration. But of course, a writer has to come up with plots. Mm-hmm. And I draw on things that I read, things that happen, that I observe, all sorts sometimes small things that catch my eye or capture my interest. And then from that, I build on it to create, out of my imagination, a plot for a book.
That's incredible. And what a interesting process. I mean, I can only imagine all of the different stories that just live in your head and all of the ways that you're able to bring those to life. You've been publishing your work since 1977. What have you learned along the way, and how has your writing style changed as time passes?
I'm not certain that my writing style has changed much. I will point out that among those 52 books, I've written in many different genres. And so the writing style will change depending upon the kind of book I'm writing. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there has been much of a change overall in the way I write. And I'd have to go back and, I guess, reread those early books. But I think it's fair to say that my writing style has hardly changed. But I have adapted to something that I've noticed along the way. Mm-hmm. And that is that kids today, young people today, young readers, have a shorter attention span than they did when I was young. Mm-hmm. I grew up at a time when there was no television, for example. Yeah. So reading was how I spent my leisure time. And I, even as a child, I enjoyed slow-moving, long books. And I think kids now, of course, are so beset by all the things that they have access to that are quick-moving and fast-paced. And I think that demands, on the part of the writer, a little speeded-up version of the writing. I regret that. I'd love to write a lengthy, slow-paced, 500-page novel, but I don't think a kid would take it out of the library. I have to be aware of that.
I totally understand that. What's your favorite genre to read or write?
I don't have a favorite, but I find that I would not enjoy writing the same kind of book over and over again. And so I'll go from one to a different sort. My best-known book is The Giver. Mm-hmm. Which was published in 1993, I think, 37 years ago. And because it became so widely popular, not only in the States, but it's been published around the world in 30 different languages.
Wow.
In fact, every day I get email from readers, and just this morning I answered a lengthy email about that book from someone in India.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, now I've forgotten where I was going with that thought. But that was a particular genre, later to be called dystopian. It was set in the future. Mm-hmm. And later, because of the demand on part of readers, I wrote a second, after several other books, I then wrote not a sequel, but a second book related to The Giver, and then two more. So there's now The Giver Quartet. And I've forgotten what question I was answering, but there have been times between those so that I'm not writing the same kind of book again and again and again without going elsewhere and returning back to that genre. I do have a new book coming out this coming September, which will once again be called dystopian because it's set in the future. Mm-hmm. That seems to be something that appeals to my imagination, but I think that's true of all of us right now. Because the world is so uncertain, mm-hmm. we think about the future and what it might involve.
Yeah, absolutely. The future, like you said, is uncertain. And while we may not know what's coming, having sources such as your books or others to look to for guidance, I think are great motivators and can give people a lot of cause for hope. Ms. Sari, what, if anything, in your own life spurs or motivates you to create a story to share with others?
Well, in my own life has been somewhat mundane, not extraordinary in any way. And yet every life has moments of great emotion of various kinds. And those are the moments that become stories. And when kids ask me about writing and what they should write about, I ask them to think about times when they were very frightened or very sad or very happy. Unusually heightened emotions. Those are the places where stories generally lie. I don't really, aside from two books that were fictionalized autobiography, all of my books are made-up stories, so they don't draw upon specific events in my own life. But they do require me as the writer to tap into heightened emotions that I have felt. And over the course of 89, almost 90 years, I've felt everything there is. And I have a very good memory of younger years. And so that's what I draw upon. My imagination creates the events that create a plot, but my memory creates the feelings of the characters that I move throughout the plot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what a fascinating process you must have. For all of our listeners who might not be familiar, McIntosh Memorial Library was one of 20 libraries selected as part of a national cohort grant that enables us to talk about banned books and the censorship movement sweeping across the United States. In our campaign for Books Unbanned, we discuss topics such as censorship, intellectual freedom, and the fight against banned books. Ms. Lowry, as an author whose works have frequently been cited by the American Library Association as being banned across several organizations, especially school libraries, how do you approach the topic of censorship, and what do you think the message of your works can be to help in the efforts against it?
Well, I often, when called upon, point out to, occasionally a parent will write to me, for example, concerned because their child is reading a book by me which deals with dark topics. Mm-hmm. And I will point out to those people, or to a larger audience if I'm called upon, that reading is a way that we, and the children in particular, rehearse for life. Every young person, one hopes that when they're 10 or 12 or 14, they haven't yet experienced tragedy, mm-hmm. or heartbreak, but they will, because they're human and lives consist of these things. And when they sit in a comfortable chair in their own home or in a library or in a schoolroom with a parent nearby or a teacher or a librarian to talk to, then they read about these things that they have not yet experienced, and they subconsciously, while they're reading, they're thinking also, because every reader does. As a book character makes a choice, the reader thinks, would I make this choice? Mm-hmm. Why? And they move along through a journey with a fictional character, and they're frightened because it's a frightening situation, or they're sad. But those are emotions that are normal human emotions, and they are preparing themselves for what life is going to have in store for them as they mature. So I think it's a very healthy thing to do, mm-hmm. To read. I mean, one hopes that the books they pick up will be wonderful books, and certainly there are not so wonderful books out there. But reading, I think, is an essential ingredient, and I don't think it should be curtailed in any way for fear of upsetting a child, because that's what a book is for, to create that upset, to make them think, to make them wonder, and to get them ready for what they're going to see down the line in real life.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, Ms. Lowry. I think that books are, I think that they're a wonderful resource that enables the readers to use their critical thinking skills and to place themselves in the shoes of the character that's going through these different adventures and journeys. And there's a lot of different lessons that can be learned all across the different works that have been created.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ms. Lowry, what do you think the public readership can do to help fight against censorship and support authors such as yourself?
Well, over the years, most of these censorship situations arise locally in a mm-hmm. school district, or smaller than that, in a school itself. A parent may come into a school library and say, I don't want this book on your shelves. Mm-hmm. And there are procedures in place everywhere for what follows. And generally, a parent fills out a form, and is required to, this may sound amusing, is required to read the entire book to place things in a context. Mm-hmm. And then it will go to the school board or a school committee, and eventually a decision will be made about that particular book. So the public can get involved, particularly at that level when there are school board meetings. I have found that the most effective, dramatically effective way of addressing these things is when young people attend a meeting and speak, go up to the microphone and speak about what that book meant to them. Very often teenagers are very eloquent and passionate about the books they read. And that has an effect on everybody sitting in the room when a young person speaks. I can write letters, and I have often, to local newspapers, to local school boards, but I'm one step or 10 steps removed from the individual situation. Mm-hmm. And when a kid or a parent comes into that meeting and goes up to the microphone, that's what has an effect, I think.
Yep, I absolutely agree. At McIntosh Memorial Library, we are in the fortunate position of having 5 teen ambassadors, as we call them, and they are a part of our Books on Ban campaign, and they go to local events throughout the community, such as the park or things at the library. They were present at our seed swap that took place 2 Saturdays ago, and they talk about book bans and censorship and the different methods and ways that people can go about helping prevent it, especially in small rural communities such as Viroqua. Ms. Lowry, of all of your works, is there one that especially stands out to you that you would recommend readers to take a look at?
Oh, gosh. You know, that depends on the individual reader. Some of my books have male protagonists, some have girl protagonists, some have different age levels, so I wouldn't single out one for all readers, excuse me, but of course, the one that I'm currently most involved with and thinking about most frequently is the one that I've just written and that will be published in September.
How exciting!
The title of it is Building 903. And as I mentioned earlier, I think it also is set in the future, the way the Giver Quartet is. Mm-hmm. But it's set in 2099 at a time when books have been banned. I mean, this is what we've been talking about, you and I. Mm-hmm. In the book, no books exist. And they have not existed for, I'm going to forget the actual number, but say 60 years. And so the protagonists in the book are 14 years old, pair of twins, girl and boy, and they have never seen a book. They don't know what a book is.
Oh.
And the major underlying theme of the book itself is that without literature, the people who populate the book have lost their imagination, their capacity to use imagination. And that was, for a writer, a fascinating thing to write about. What is a person like who no longer has any imagination? Of course, and because most of my books have happy endings, this one does as well.
Oh.
But it's a kind of scary journey that it makes to try to back what has been lost when books have disappeared.
That sounds fascinating. Ms. Lowry, is this book available for pre-ordering yet?
I don't think yet, no. In fact, the actual book has not yet been printed. I spent yesterday at the publishing company, and they were able to show me the cover of it, but the actual book doesn't yet exist.
Oh, well, I know, speaking as the youth services director, the one who manages all of our youth collections, I know that I'll certainly be keeping my eye out for it.
Okay.
Lastly, Ms. Lowry, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you would like our listeners or our readers of the library to know?
No, but I will tell you that I do have a relationship with Wisconsin, so it's nice to talk to you. My grandparents were Norwegian immigrants.
Oh, how exciting.
Many Norwegian immigrants had settled in Wisconsin, and that's where my father grew up. And that's where I used to go to visit my grandmother. I send my greetings to those of you in Wisconsin, where I assume it is still quite cold.
Oh, yeah, we are sitting in the 20s today, and we might get a high of 37, but the weather has been very tumultuous, and it's up and down every week.
But I had a birthday last week. My birthday is March 20th, and I've always liked my birthday because it's the first day of spring.
Aww.
Even if it's 20 degrees outside, you get a feeling that spring is on the way. So
absolutely. Well, happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Miss Lowry. We are honored that you were able to join us today. And I just hope that you have a fantastic rest of your week and your weekend. And we'll keep an eye out for your next work in progress here.
Okay. Thank you. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. For all of our listeners, I would just like to send out the shout out that we will be hosting Miss Lowry to do a virtual talk with us at the Viroqua Area High School on Friday, April 24th. This event will kick off at 12:45 p.m. The door is opening at 12:30 p.m. And our teen ambassadors will give a brief presentation about the work that they have been doing as part of the Books Unbanned campaign. And we'll introduce Miss Lowry, who will start her talk at 1 p.m. For about a half an hour, and then she will wrap up the final half an hour with a community Q&A. So we would like to invite the community to come to the high school at that time. Again, doors open at 12:30 p.m. to come see Miss Lowry. We are back in the studio. This is WDRT Viroqua, the Macintosh Radio Review. We are going to go ahead and get started right away with our adult programming and outreach coordinator, Caleb DeWitt, telling us all about the fun programs that we have coming up for the adults here at Macintosh Memorial Library.
Thanks, Amelia. This is Caleb, and my big question to you all is, what are you doing in the yard right now? What are you doing on the farm, the homestead, on your balcony? And my ulterior motive in asking that is our garden tool library is live. We've been open for about a month at this point. We've been checking out tools, and I don't know if you know about it yet, but a lot of people have been using it. I've seen the soil blockers go out, some augers, some post hole diggers. I just tested out this new technology in dandelion weeding, and it's amazing. So you can find out what tools we have by going to our website under services, click Garden Tool Library. You can see the full online catalog, or if you're in person, we have a printed catalog at the circulation desk. Take a look, see how we can help you. We also have a survey if you have ideas for us, what you want to see added to the collection, what you're working on, what could be beneficial to the community. Let us know. This is a pilot program, and this is all about what you need to start growing. Speaking of growing, we are going to have an on-demand garden tool library at the farmers market. That starts in a couple weeks. Saturday, May 2nd is the first farmers market of this year. We are so excited. We're going to see you there. And here's what's coming up in adult programming at the Macintosh Memorial Library. Here's what we have coming up. So next week, I'll start with special events, and then I'll talk about what we have recurring that you're already in love with. Next week, we have a Boggle poetry session. This is National Poetry Month. So we have a guest presenter, and they are going to help you engage in creating poetry using the mechanics of the game Boggle. So, you know, the dice with the letters all over it. It's a great way to break out of a creative rut or for beginners to get into poetry. It's going to be pretty fun. That's Tuesday, April 28th, 5 p.m., same day as our mindfulness and meditation practice group. So if your family has varying interests, one person can go do Boggle poetry and the other can get their meditation on. Also happening next week, on Tuesday, April 21st, we have the next part of our opioid prevention series. That's with Scenic Bluffs Community Health Centers, and they are going to be talking about medication-assisted treatment for recovery. So what options are out there for people who are in recovery using medication to help them live the life that they want to live? Also coming up in May, some really fun, exciting programming. One of the classics that people love to come to is a needle felting class. We're doing flowers this session. And hint, hint, that's happening 3 days before Mother's Day. Thursday, May 7th, 5 p.m., you got to RSVP. This one fills up every time we do it. It's Needle Felting Flowers, Kathleen Kroska, 5 p.m. Thursday, May 7th. Other fun stuff happening in May. The day before that, Wednesday, May 6th, the ADRC Senior Resource Fair. I'm going to be up there calling bingo from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. That's at the Vernon County Fairgrounds. And the whole event is from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Come have some fun. Related topic, we're starting a couple new series in May. One of them is the Medicare series. So we are exploring Medicare and the kind of complications and just demystifying it overall in a series of four workshops on that at the library. And then Dr. Kalinowski is going to be doing a pain management series. So check out our posters, check out our website, get the information. One super fun event that's coming up that you're not going to want to miss out on because no one has ever done this before. The library was part of a pilot program called the Music for Libraries Project. And for the past 6 months, a group of local musicians, they've been getting together, having jam sessions at the Bethel home, and they're going to do their concert at the library in the newly renovated library courtyard. That's the outdoor space on Rock Avenue. Nobody's done this before. A brand new experience for Viroqua. Come rock out with us. That's going to be Monday, May 11th, 4 p.m. at the new courtyard. And that's the Swedish Fish Band. And obviously that is fish with a P-H. Another note, you may have noticed a fence on the courtyard. That's part of the improvement project. The gate on the fence is closed, but you are more than welcome to come and enjoy that space. The gate is there just so you can, if you have your kids or a little dog or something, you can feel safe and secure in that space and have all the fun you want. Some reoccurring events, some of the classics. Chess Club, that's every Wednesday at 4 p.m. So that's today happening right now. There's Tabletop Takeover Mondays at 4 p.m. And 2 weeks left to use the media conversion kit at the library. So that means you can convert VHS to DVD or slides or film to digital. And you can book that resource on our website. Last two things that I have to shout out for. Next week is National Library Week. That's April 19th through 25th. And it is converging with another interesting event, which is the Lyrid Meteor Shower. That's going to be peaking about a week from today. That's Thursday, April 21st, and Friday, April 22nd. Looks like between sunset and midnight are going to be the best viewing hours. That's before the moon rises and while it's still dark outside. So enjoy. And I forgot to mention Strong Bodies. It's a free fitness class happening at the Bethel Home Fellowship Hall. That's every Tuesday, every Thursday, 2 to 3 p.m. at the Bethel Home. That starts in a couple weeks. That's May 5th. Through July 2nd. That's brought to you in partnership with Vernon County Over 50. And again, you can go to our website, see our calendar of events, RSVP if you need to. Check out our Facebook. We're going to keep you informed.
Wow, Caleb, sounds like we have a lot of fun and interesting things coming up here. In April, we are chock full of fun programs and ideas that are going to be going on at the library for the youth of Viroqua to enjoy. Again, this is WDRT Viroqua, the Macintosh Radio Review. Coming up in April, we are going to kick off our Loop and Stitch program. This is a crochet, knitting, and textile workshop. So if you do embroidery or hand sewing or anything else similar, you can come on down and join us. This one is open to ages 10 to 18 and will be located in our program room. So this will be a fun kind of drop-in informal class for kids to socialize and work on their fun textile hobbies. Please note that this is a bring your own materials program. These items will not be provided for you. We also are going to celebrate National Library Week here during the month of April, from April 20th to the 24th. So every single day between April 20th to 24th, we are going to offer programs for all ages to enjoy without any registration required. On Monday, we're going to have a bookmark workshop where kids can come in and make their own bookmarks. This will be from 4 to 4:30. On Tuesday, we're going to have a watercolor Wonderland art night. So this one is from 4:30 to 5:30. On Wednesday, we're having the Valley Stewardship Network drop by, and we'll be helping kids plant different flowers. So this one's from 4 to 4:30. On Thursday, we have our Spring Scientist Mad Magic program from 4:30 to 5:30. And of course, on Friday, we have that big Friday, April 24th event. I will go into detail about that one here, but for now, I'm going to keep talking about some other programs. On Wednesday, April 22nd, we're going to offer an Herb Day Planters to help celebrate Earth Day at McIntosh Memorial Library. This one is open to ages 8 to 18 and is located in our program room. It will be registration required and is from 4:45 to 5:45 p.m. We also have a Daniel Tiger story time happening on Wednesday, April 29th with Mr. Christopher and Ann Hartberg from 10:30 to 11 a.m. over in our aviary. This one is open to ages birth to five. So if you are a fan of the popular PBS character and show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, come on down and stop by for a Daniel Tiger story time. All right, as I said before, on Friday, April 24th, we have our big Books on Band Freedom to Read event. This program is an exploration of books, freedom, and ideas on Friday, April 24th. We are going to kick it off at 12:45 with an introduction by the Teen Ambassadors, who have been working with McIntosh Memorial Library since October of 2025 on our Books on Band campaign that has been founded by Brooklyn Public Library and is a response to the increasing national movement of censorship and the fight for intellectual freedom. So at 12:45, our Teen Ambassadors are going to introduce and join us at Viroqua Area High School in the gymnasium for a special virtual author presentation featuring author Lois Lowry. Lois Lowry is the author of books Numbers, The Stars, and The Giver, and she'll join us via Zoom for a 30-minute presentation followed by a 30-minute audience Q&A. Later on in the day at 4 o'clock, we are going to move over to the Westby Area Performing Arts Center. So the Books on Band event will continue with the presentation by the Teen Ambassadors. I will be giving an introduction speech myself. And the Teen Ambassadors are going to be joined by Emma Erickson of the Brooklyn Public Library to talk all about Books on Band and the importance of this campaign. From 4:30 to 6 p.m., we have a film screening of The Librarians. The Librarians is a documentary where librarians unite to combat book banning, defending intellectual freedom on democracy's front lines amid the unprecedented censorship movements happening in Texas, Florida, and beyond. So again, this one is from 4:30 to 6 at the Westby Area Performing Arts Center. We are going to cap off the night with a special in-person visit with author Angie Thomas. Angie Thomas is the author of the popular 2017 book, The Hate U Give, which was made into a movie in 2019. This is going to take place from 7 to 8 p.m. Angie Thomas will talk about her works and we will have an audience Q&A. And then from 8 to 9 p.m., there is going to be an author book signing where you can purchase a copy of The Hate U Give or one of her other works from the bookseller that will be on site, Dragonfly Books, at the Westby Area Performing Arts Center. All of these events are open to all of Vernon County. They are free. You do not have to register. So we hope that we see you both at the Viroqua Middle and High School Gymnasium, as well as the Westby Area Performing Arts Center. Okay, coming up in May, on Friday, May 1st, we have our May Day Bouquet Crafters. You can join me, Amelia Jury, to learn all about floriculture and make your own May bouquet. We also have the Mario Kart Racers event located in our teen section. This one is on Monday, May 11th from 4 to 5. Sorry, the May Day Bouquet is also from 4 to 5. And you can come on by and play some Mario Kart against your fellow tweens and teens. This one is open to ages 7 to 15. On Thursday, May 14th, we have our Lego Flower Cultivators from 4 to 5 with Mr. Christopher. So if you're a fan of Lego and want to make your very own Lego flower, stop on by and join us for that. Registration is required for this event alongside the May Day Bouquet Crafters. Lastly, in May, we have our Sew and Bloom Daisy Pillow Party on Friday, May 15th. We are going to run this one from 4 to 5:30. Registration is required for this event. Otherwise, throughout May, we have our ongoing program. So, of course, as I mentioned before, we have Loop and Stitch on the third Saturday of the month from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. That is open to ages 10 to 18. Again, this is a bring-your-own-material craft. We have our Library Garden Club that is happening on the 2nd and 4th Thursdays from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. This one is open from ages 5 and up. We cap it at age 18, but if you are an adult and you want to stop by with your kid, you are more than welcome to. We will have tools and gloves provided, and we're going to tell kids all about the fun of gardening. They'll get to plant, weed, water, and do all of the fun things that it takes to keep our garden going. In the fall, when we are ready to harvest, we donate 80% of our proceeds back to the Living Faith Food Pantry so that McIntosh Memorial Library can continue to give back to our community. And then we keep 20% of the proceeds to do educational programming at McIntosh Memorial Library. Otherwise, throughout the month, we continue to offer our story time on Mondays from 10:30 to 11 a.m. We have Kids Art Club on the 2nd and 4th Tuesdays from 4 to 5. We have a Tween and Teen Art Club on the 1st and 3rd Tuesday from 3:30 to 5. We have our Homeschool Resource Session on Friday mornings at 9:30. Our Toddler Playgroup with the Parenting Place on Thursday mornings at 9:30. We have Lego Club weekly on Wednesdays from 3:30 to 4:30. STEM Club on the 1st and 3rd Monday from 4 to 5. And much, much more. You can head on over to our website, McIntoshMemorialLibrary.org, to check out our calendar, see which events need registration, and get more information. Again, this is WDRT Viroqua, and we are live in the studio with your host, Youth Services Director Amelia Jury, and the Adult Programming and Outreach Coordinator Caleb DeWitt. We are now going to go ahead and move into the second part of our interviews that we have going on today. Our next interview is with famed author Angie Thomas. Ms. Thomas is the author of famous notable works such as The Hate U Give, which came out in 2017 and rose to notoriety, alongside a popular movie based on that book of the same name in 2019. So, Ms. Thomas, go ahead and thank you for joining us.
Yes. Hi, everyone. I'm Angie Thomas. I am the author of several books, including The Hate U Give, On the Come Up, Concrete Rose, and my Nick Blake and the Remarkable series. And I'm super excited to be speaking with you all today, but also to see you pretty soon in person for an event. I'm thrilled anytime I get to speak to audiences about voice and books and all of the wonderful things that I get to talk about. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Oh, amazing. Ms. Thomas, could you tell our listeners a little bit about your background, such as how you got into writing your now renowned books and a history of your authorship?
Yeah, sure. Now, the funny thing for me is when I tell people my start, the interesting thing is I wasn't a big reader when I was a teenager. I write for teenagers now, but when I was a teenager, I wasn't a big reader. When I was a kid, I loved books and I loved reading. But once I got maybe around 13 years old, I stopped reading as much. And now as an adult, I can look back and I can see like it was because I wasn't connecting with a lot of the books that were available to young adults at the time. There weren't a lot of books about Black kids that were available. There weren't a lot of books about Black kids living in Mississippi that were dealing with the things that I was dealing with. So for me, it felt as if the message was books aren't for you. But that wasn't true. And it took me becoming an adult to decide, you know what? Not only are books for people, anybody, but I can be one of the people who writes the books that reach the young people who are often overlooked. So for me, it was a slow realization. I wish I could say I was that person who always knew I wanted to be an author and a writer. Mm-hmm. I always knew I wanted to be a storyteller. I just wasn't sure which avenue or how I could go about doing it or even the kinds of stories that I wanted to tell. But once I got to college and I discovered a love for storytelling and writing and reading and books again, I realized this is something I want to do, and I want to be a person who crafts, as Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop says, mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors for young people, particularly. But then, to my surprise, those books became mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors for not so young people as well. So it's been a journey, but it's been a wonderful journey, and it's shown me, if nothing else, the power of storytelling.
I absolutely agree, Ms. Thomas. Was it always your dream to be an author?
You know, when I was a little kid, I knew I wanted to be a storyteller. I did. I loved telling stories. I knew that I wanted to tell some kinds of stories. I would tell stories to my mom. Like at night, I would spend hours. I remember I came up with this soap opera that I would tell my mom every night before bed. Like I would continue it, and I'd end on like a cliffhanger every night. Like that's what I did for like over a year. I loved storytelling. But It took me going to college and realizing, like, you know what, you could write those kinds of stories down and make books or something like that. So it took me a while to get to that point, but storytelling was just always there. It was always a part of me. And the truth of the matter is, being a Black person in Mississippi, I've heard stories my entire life, and I don't mean like sitting down, you know, reading a book. I mean sitting on the porch and I'm hearing stories from my grandmother or neighbors and things like that. So storytelling has always been a part of my DNA. It took me a while to realize I could be an author.
Oh, well, I'm sure on behalf of all of our listeners, I can say thank you for following that dream and writing these books that have rose to notoriety. Speaking of your works, Ms. Thomas, what are some of your sources of inspiration?
I'm inspired by a lot of things. Music is a huge inspiration for me. Specifically, you can look at like my first couple of books, specifically The Hate U Give and Concrete Rose. Tupac Shakur was a huge inspiration. His art, his life was a huge inspiration on those books in period. But I'm greatly inspired by hip hop music. It gave me, when I wasn't reading books, hip hop filled in the void for me when it came to storytelling. Rappers were talking about the things I connected with. They were talking about communities like mine. They were talking about situations I experienced. And in a lot of ways, they gave me the permission to be the author that I am now before I knew that I wanted to be an author. So music is always a big inspiration, but honestly too, just young people and the things that they're experiencing and dealing with, and then my own things that I dealt with as a young person, tapping into that. I still remember what it was like being 13, 14, 15, 16. You know, I think anytime we start to forget those things, we start to lose a bit of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for us as adults to remember what it was like back then so we can have more empathy for young people now. So I'm inspired by my own things, but I'm also inspired by the conversations I have with young people. I get a chance to travel the world and meet kids from all walks of life. I remember it was about, 2 weeks ago, like 1 week I was in a juvenile detention center in Austin talking to kids about Concrete Rose and about that. And then a week later I was in London talking to kids at a posh private school about the same book. They're coming with different perspectives, very different perspectives, but at the end of the day, they're young people. They may have different experiences, but the journey of being a young person and that, it's all remains the same. The same kid who wants to be heard in a juvenile detention center is a lot like the kid who wants to be heard at the posh private school in London. So I'm inspired when I talk to young people. I'm inspired by their lives, their thoughts, the way they see the world, the way they think. And honestly, they give me more hope than adults do most days. So I'm grateful for I can give them stories because they give me something right back. They give me hope.
Ms. Angie, I wanted to know, so The Hate U Give kind of skyrocketed your career into fame in 2017. What was that process like for you from your story arc of being a storyteller as a kid to kind of losing that because the media didn't connect with you to reconnecting with that storytelling, and then suddenly people really, really connected with your book and threw you into the limelight. What was that process like? Did you learn anything from it? And are there any moments from that time that really stood out to you?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm still processing that process. I think I'm still processing it. There are days still it doesn't hit me. It's funny because yesterday a friend of mine texted me and she was like, "You are an answer on Jeopardy." And I'm like, "Are you serious?" This is insane to me. I'm like, me? An answer? Like, they mentioned me and Tupac in the same sentence on Jeopardy. I was like, wow. You know, so for me, I'm still processing it. I don't know if I'll ever stop processing it. But I think, if nothing else, that journey with The Hate U Give, that book, and the success of it, and just the impact it has had, to a degree, and sometimes it feels like that happened to somebody else. And and honestly, that helps me out because it takes a lot of pressure off of myself. Because I look at books almost as being like, this is not to downplay parenthood or anything like that, but for me, my books are like my kids. I don't have children, I have dogs, but besides that, I have my books. And once I've written one and it's gone off into the world and I see the impact it's had on people as a author parent, I'm like, wow, you're really doing things. You're really making, you know, an impact. You're really changing perspectives. I still get letters and stuff from people who reach out to me, and they're like, that book taught me something. Yesterday someone reached out via a friend of mine, and she was like, I finally read it for the first time and I'm blown away. It taught me so much. And I'm like, look at that book go. You know, it's kind of like watching a baby bird fly. Well, the bird isn't a baby anymore. It's 10 years old almost now. But I'm like, look at it. It's still having an effect. And so it's still making an impact. And that's amazing to me. But what it's shown me too is that stories matter. Stories matter. Who writes the story matters. The story that's written matters. But also, stories matter, and they connect us. They help us grow. They help us change. They help us see the world differently. They help shape the world. And it's shown me, if nothing else, the power that can have. I've had young people who've reached out to me who were, you know, maybe in high school when they read The Hate U Give, and now they're teachers themselves, and they're like, that book encouraged me to pursue becoming an educator or things like that. So, again, I'm still processing the impact of that novel. And I don't think I'll ever stop. I think the day that I stop processing it is bad for my mental health. So I think it's going to be an ongoing process for me, because it continues to change minds and lives, which is amazing.
Ms. Thomas, you've written so many, like you just said, life-changing books, and the influence of your works has spread far and wide. Obviously, like you just said, from a little center in Austin, Texas, to London. What, if anything, in your own life influences you or helps inspire you to create a story to share with others?
Well, I think just the fact of being from Mississippi, growing up in Mississippi, that's always going to be probably my biggest influence. Everything that I write, the way that I see the world, my worldview is through a lens of being a Black woman raised, born, bred, and raised in Mississippi. William Faulkner, I think, once said that if you can understand Mississippi, you can understand America. Because the way this country is set up, the way this country operates socially, economically, all these things you can see clearly here in Mississippi. The way people interact with one another, the way race and gender and all these different things impact society. The things you're seeing now on a wider scale, we've seen in Mississippi first, you know. So it's always going to be the biggest influence on how I write stories. It's always going to be the biggest influence on how I see the world. It's my filter. And so I think it's probably from a storytelling perspective, you know, I feel as if there's not much to do in Mississippi but tell stories. You know, there's not much else to do. That's why we're a state known for such great writers. And if I'm considered one of them, that's incredible. But, you know, there's not much else to do but look for the stories and find the stories and find the characters and see it. It's literally in some ways in the soil of this state. And so I'd say that's my biggest influence as a creative, as a writer. But I would also say, too, to bring up in the community that I grew up in Mississippi, my neighborhood, Georgetown, no matter whether I'm writing Garden Heights, where you see Star and Bree and Maverick, you're going to see bits and pieces of the community that I grew up in that community. Or whether I'm writing The Remarkable World, you know, where they have manifestors and vampires and rougarous and shapeshifters, you're still going to see bits and pieces of Mississippi in that. So I'd say that's going to be my greatest influence all time, forever. And everything that I write, you're going to see something that has some Mississippi flair or has been inspired by this state, the good and the bad.
So in a lot of your books, it seems like the protagonist is finding their voice, they're seeing injustice, they're personally affected by it and doing something about it. I think that's pretty realistic. A lot of us are seeing things on social media, in person. How do you think that bridges to reality? What do you think that teens, young people, how can they take inspiration from the way that your characters have found their voice and become advocates for justice?
I think a lot of times when we talk about social justice and we talk about activism, it's always easy to look at it and feel as if that's not something I can do. That's not something that I'm capable of doing. And what I hope that my books do, I hope that my books make it feel more achievable for young people. I hope it shows young people that, yeah, you have a voice and it matters. Like one of my favorite genres of literature is I love reading biographies. Mm-hmm. I especially love reading autobiographies of people who've made like huge impacts on the world. Like, for instance, I've been rereading the autobiography of Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. And the impact that that book has had on me has always been like incredible. But one thing that I took away from that book was the fact that Malcolm X was a person just like me, you. He experienced things. He went through hardships just like you and I, but he made a choice, and that choice was, I'm going to do something. I'm going to use my voice. I'm going to speak up and speak out, no matter the cost. And that, when you look at it like that, when you put a person like that who has been held up to a high standard so long, and you read their autobiography, it humanizes them mm-hmm. and brings them closer to you, and it helps you to see, like, wait a minute, this guy was like me. If he did that, what can I do? And I think for me as a writer, that's one of my goals, to show young people using fictional characters. So, you know, I may write a Star Carter, but a Star Carter could be a real young lady who's picking that book up, and she sees herself in that character. She sees her life reflected back to her, and then she realizes, wait a minute, just like Star had the ability to speak up and speak out, I do too. Or a young lady's reading On the Come Up, and she sees a character like Bree who has these dreams and hopes and aspirations, and she sees the things Bree is going through, and she's like, wait a minute, I connect with that. Bree used her voice to speak mm-hmm. up and speak out. Mm-hmm. I can too. Or a young man picks up Concrete Rose. That's what I get a lot of letters from young people, especially who are in juvenile detention centers, and they look at Maverick and they see themselves. They see a young man who's making mistakes, but he's finding his way, he's learning, he's growing, and they're like, wait a minute, if he could do that, maybe I can too. So I think mm-hmm. that's, for me, the role of fiction. I can't, you know, I can't sit up here and say, good. But I was just saying, like, the same way that an autobiography can have an effect on someone and show them, like, hey, this is a real person who experienced real things, but then they still went on to change the world. I hope that my mm-hmm. books could do it too. I'm a firm believer that if we want to change the world, we just got to start by changing the world around us. And I hope that that's what my novels show young people. You don't have to go out here and try to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes you just got to help wheels that are already trying to move, help them move a little bit faster. You have the ability to do that. You have the voice to do that. You have the power to do that. If you care about things that are happening around you, you can do something about it to change it. And so that's what I hope my novels do. The same way that the autobiography of Malcolm X can show someone, like, hey, this is a real person who was a human being just like you, and he changed the world, you have that ability to do it too.
I'm so glad you bring up activism, Ms. Thomas. Here at McIntosh Memorial Library, we have a group of 5 teen ambassadors who meet monthly at the library, and we discuss topics such as censorship and the fight for justice, intellectual freedom, and the kind of censorship movement and banned books that are sweeping across our nation. As an author whose works have frequently been cited by the American Library Association as being banned or challenged across several areas of the United States, especially in school libraries, how do you think your works, especially The Hate U Give or Concrete Rose, how do you think those can approach the topic of censorship? And what do you think the teens who read it can do to help in the efforts for intellectual freedom?
You know, it's so fascinating to me that there are organizations, there are people who are so bent on banning books, and we have so many worse things happening in this country right now. Mm-hmm. You know, my book is not nearly as dangerous as an AR-15. In fact, my book isn't dangerous at all. I have yet to have anyone come to me and say, your book is a threat to my life. No, it's not. It may be a threat to your worldview, mm-hmm. but what's wrong with sometimes taking time to get into the shoes of someone else and seeing the world differently? Because that's what books allow us to do. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when it comes to censorship and book banning, these are efforts done by people who don't even take the time to read the book. They take one little thing and they make an entire assumption about it. And honestly, that's ironic to me, because that's what happens to the young people that I'm writing these books for. Mm-hmm. Specifically, when I'm writing books, that's not to say I'm not thinking about other young people, but I always think about young Black kids, especially young Black kids who feel like reading isn't for them, who think books aren't for them. The young Black kids who maybe they are living in a single-parent household, or they're living in a community that's a lot like Garden Heights. And these are the kids who sometimes people look at them and they make an assumption based on the way they speak, they dress, present themselves. The same thing is being done to my books that are written with them in mind. So for me, it angers me on a different level, because I'm like, what you're saying to that young person is, you make me uncomfortable. The books that are written for you make me uncomfortable. I want you to disappear. I want you to be silent. And we got to push back on that. But what I would say to young people is, keep reading the books. If they're banning it, if they're trying to keep you from reading it, maybe that's something you need to read. That tells me, if nothing else. I know for me, when I was a kid, if it was something they told me not to read, I wanted to read it more, you know? Mm-hmm. But what we can do too, what young people can do, is they have voices, they have power, and they have the ability to go into these same meetings that are being held, these school board meetings, all of these things. They have the ability to go in there and speak up and speak out and say, hey, these books mean something to me. I've had it happen. I've seen it happen multiple times. Even when it recently, there was an instance in the UK for the first time where somebody was trying to challenge my book. Mm-hmm. And this young lady and her mom spoke out against the attempted ban. And this young lady specifically said, hey, this is how this book impacted me. This is what this book means to me. Because nobody can take that away from you. They can try to take the books out of the libraries or this, and this. But they can't take the experience from a young person who's read a book and said that this changed my life. And that experience is way more important than their assumption. And so when I think about censorship, the way we push back is we keep getting louder. We keep speaking up. We keep speaking out. We keep making ourselves heard. And we say that we push back against these attempts. But also, too, I say that to young people, you know, speak up and speak out for books that you believe in. But for the not-so-young people, I need more adults to recognize that these efforts to ban books are a waste of time and resources and funds, if mm-hmm. we're going to just be honest. You know, we recently had a lawsuit where we sued the state of Florida. And all I can think is, you know how much money that they used to go to court to fight us about a book ban? That could have been used to help homelessness. That could have been used towards poverty. That could have been used towards anything else that actually matters. A book ban doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. Banning a book isn't an important thing with all the stuff that we have going on. So I would say for the young people, use your voice and speak up for these books. And I'd say for the not so young people, we need more of you to speak up and speak out against resources being used to ban books that could be used to do actual things that help our communities and our young people.
Amazing. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you have any more works that we can look forward to coming out in the future?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do. Next year is going to be a pretty busy year. We have the 10th edition of The Hate U Give coming out next year. We also have a graphic novel in the works for The Hate U Give. Ooh. So I'm super, super excited about that. But this year, I have a book that I co-wrote with some authors, and it's called Breakout. And it's kind of like a murder mystery. Super excited. It comes out in June.
Ooh.
I'm working on the third Nick Blake book, so I'm super, super excited about that. Hope to have an announcement soon about the film. We have that in the works. They are coming. I'm super, super, super excited about that. I'm writing the script for the movies myself, so that's going to be fun that I get to do that. I have a lot of things coming over the next year and a half, so it's going to be a busy time, but hopefully, if nothing else, is going to provide, again, more mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors for young people, not just in books, but in film and television.
Ms. Thomas, I am so, so excited, and I'll definitely be keeping my eye out for all those fun things that you just mentioned. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute honor to be able to speak to you. And I know on behalf of myself and Macintosh Moore Library and all of our patrons, we're so, so excited to have you join us on Friday, April 24th. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you would like our listeners to know before we wrap up for our session?
I would just say this. Please, 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 let's get back to a love of reading. The world is a crazy and unfortunate place right now. There's so many things that we read every single day when we pick up our phones, and they can make us feel less hopeful. But if we pick up books, if we start reading books a bit more, if we start taking the time to read a book and putting ourselves in the shoes of characters who are like us and unlike us, we're all better for it. So let's get back into a love of reading. Let's get back into a love of stories. Let's get back into a love of storytelling, because it's one of our greatest weapons in our fight for justice, equality, and also just in our fight to show love and build community. So books are important. Books matter. Storytelling matters. Let's not forget that.
I absolutely agree. Well, thank you so much. Remember, listeners, Miss Angie Thomas will be visiting us in person on Friday, April 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. to give a talk on her books, The Hate U Give, alongside an audience Q&A, followed by a book signing. Thank you so much for joining us, Miss Thomas. I hope that you have a wonderful weekend, and we are so excited to see you in less than 2 weeks.
See you soon. Thank you so much.
That was our interview with the lovely Angie Thomas. And I would just like to say thank you to all of our listeners for joining us today.